Poetry is motion. Poetry is emotion. Poetry is he-motion. Poetry is her-motion. Poetry is hurt-motion. Poetry is heart motion. Poetry as a notion. Poetry was an ocean. Poetry is commotion.
Hello, everybody. I'm Stephen Pitters, and welcome to the Spokane Open Poetry Program here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM. This is Thin Air Community Radio Station, and we are on the stream at www.kyrs.org, where the young, the old, and the in-between gather to share their thoughts, feelings, and emotions. We are back today with the noted poet from the Gulf Islands of Canada, Michelle Merlint, and we'll be listening to two of her poems. These are from a CD that she sent to us. And the first one is going to be The Pearl of Dubai, hearkening back to the early days of 1900 when pearl diving, not oil, was the biggest money maker in the Arabian Gulf. This story, which is pure fiction, tells of a humble pearl diver, the famous pearl he finds, and the special bond that unites the two. Again, I'm Stephen Pitters here at the Spoken Open Poetry Program on Thin Air Community Radio. And remember, we are here to simply be a bridge over which others may cross. And you, as you know, the mission of the Spoken Open Poetry Program is to make available to poets, prose writers, and musicians the opportunity to share their skills. And again, we'd like to give a shout out to our friends near and far. Locally, we have Mike and Mary. Far, we have Joe and Gina down in California way. So that having been said, let me first read to you one of my short pieces, and then we will turn the show over to the wonderful sounds of Michelle Merlint. My piece is called What It Does. We bleed for attachment like a student who was suspended from the fold that served to make her whole by controlling the rush of her brook and the directions it took for her to grab hold her lofty adventures. The soul would profess to attest for a lack of distress that arrests the good one has, and under duress not contest but confess with a pious heart that contributes more than mere sounds of unity, but rather hours and hours and days after days, soon to become years of unfettered communion, like class reunions and later 30-year anniversary marked by 10 to 15 grandchildren. Love lives in a flux. We know it cannot be controlled, only felt deeply temporarily in fits and dips of passion like a raging sea. My intention was to prevent falling from the deck of the boat. Then your breathless entry from its stern and you gliding forward to the bow forced me to lean precariously over the rail for a decidedly unobstructed view. The stakes were suddenly high if you took yourself out of sight, a difficult farewell to swallow, as I might lose myself from your spell and have hell ringing its bell, bidding me adieu from you with mocking laughter. If you are just tuning in, this is the Spokane Open Poetry Program. I'm Stephen Pitters, your host. And now sit back and enjoy one of two interesting rhyming story poems inspired by the magic of the Middle East this time and written by Michelle Merlint.
In the ballroom of the Emirates Tower Hotel, a stunning collection of jewels to sell. For auction by Christie's, a royal treasure assessed at a value quite beyond measure. Some ancient dynasty, whose blood runs blue, has found itself in a financial stew. A few bagatelles in the attic unheeded, to be sacrificed for money needed. The jewels are displayed and locked in glass cases. Over luxury carpet, the watchful guard paces. Tiaras, bracelets, necklaces, and rings, adornment fit for princesses and kings. Burmese rubies that hypnotize, blood-red beauties enchant and surprise. Siberian emeralds, bird's egg size, flaunt infinite flame to mesmerize. Kashmiri sapphires, once worn by a Shah, or perhaps on the turban of a Maharaja. Coral and jadestone set in gold, just like the rest, it all must be sold. African diamonds flicker and flash, and they can be yours for a truckload of cash. But the necklace esteemed the collection highlight sits up on a platform lit bright in full sight. In place of honor, like a queen on a throne, this rare jewel glows that is not a stone. Like a cream and pink cloud in the dawn-touched sky, eclipsing all jewels, is the Pearl of Dubai. A pearl lustrous and large, with commanding presence, teardrop shape shimmers with luminescence. From the Sea of Dubai, a pearl like no other, prized from the womb of its oyster mother. In the Arabian Gulf, now, oil is prince. But long before oil, 100 years since, a different trade flourished and wealth did bring, back in the days when the pearl trade was king. In forgotten seasons of summer heat, men took to the boats of the pearling fleet, rowing out from Dubai's creek, sailing into the Gulf to seek and harvest the ocean's floor for hidden wealth that lay in store. The boats dropped anchor, as few now remember, over oyster beds from May till September. On small open decks lived the men of the crew, under blistering sun and crowded too, barely space to store rations and never a feast to feed captain and divers and last but not least the shaman on board with spells to say for keeping the murderous sharks away. To the divers fell the daily grind of plunging the waters for oysters to find. Skin oiled, ears plugged, and nose clipped, over the edge of the boat they slipped. They sank to the bottom, rocks tied to their waist, eyes stinging with salt and sea water to taste. Into their baskets they gathered the shellfish. For a minute or more was all they could wish, as long as a lungful of air could last. Holding their breath, they had to work fast. A yank on the rope to signal their purpose, and men on the boat hauled them up to the surface. Over and over again they descended, a grueling task that never ended, a hazardous way to make a living, with wages so meager they were hardly worth giving. Humble laborers, by boat owners enlisted, who were shrewd with money and sometimes tight-fisted. And once they left the divers' hands, the pearls were sold on to foreign lands. For pearls were valued a status sublime, above any treasure at that time. On the day the Pearl of Dubai was found, diver and pearl were spiritually bound. Deep underwater, the diver spied an oyster so huge he almost died. The diver's eyes stared in disbelief at this monster matriarch of the reef. Barnacled, heavy, rough, and gray, slumbering on the seabed it lay. Rising up with this oyster clasped to his chest, the strength of the rope was put to the test. The diver collapsed, gasping and dazed on deck, while the crew stood looking amazed. With a prayer to Allah, the captain's knife slips, working hard to pry open the oyster's lips. The oyster, defeated, it slackened its jaw to surrender the biggest pearl man ever saw. A satin-skinned beauty, lunar white, or so it seemed in the glare of the jealous sunlight. Though he never dreamed this pearl to keep, the pearl diver loved this child of the deep. By an invisible silken thread to his heart, the diver felt tied to the pearl from the start. In no time at all, the events of that day were carried through the air like windswept sea spray. As fast as a lightning flash in the sky, the legend spread of the Pearl of Dubai. Sold for a fortune, the pearl gained fame in a French house of prestigious name. Then, strangely, the pearl disappeared from view. Lost or hidden, nobody knew. A decade of decades, destiny passed. Thought vanished forever. The pearl, at long last, reappeared to the world in a very odd case. A barrage of expert attention to face. Found in a castle of rotting decay, in a rusty old trunk, this famous pearl lay. Now returned to Dubai in a blaze of glory, mystique enhanced by its intriguing story. In the opulent ballroom, it lies in wait for divine intervention to fulfill its fate. The minutes tick and hours pass while the pearl languishes behind the glass. Many rich men inspect it and try, eager to bid on the Pearl of Dubai. These serious bidders, curiously enough, the pearl resists, their caresses rebuff. The enthusiasm that began at a sizzle by the end of the day has started to fizzle. For the pearl is intended for just one man, and he alone can complete fate's plan. Then, through the doors, comes a late arriver, the revered grandson of the old pearl diver. Dressed in a dish-dash snow-white and fine, of cool elegance and master design, exuding authority and strength in reserve, a man of prowess, power, and nerve. For fortune blessed the diver's ambition, and in two generations brought it to fruition. Due to his grandson's daring and vision, the family's name like a comet has risen. Attaining status beyond expectation, his grandson a pillar of the nation. With dignified step and purposeful pace, the grandson walks up to the pearl in its case. As a boy, he had sat on his grandfather's knee and heard tales of this wondrous pearl of the sea. At this masterpiece of Mother Nature he stares. Nothing else in all of creation compares. Like a thunderclap from the heavens on high, this man falls in love with the Pearl of Dubai. Drawn to the pearl like a moth to the flame, the grandson submits to its magnetic claim. On auction night, prepared to compete, the grandson takes a front row seat. From the podium, the auctioneer begins the task in rhythmic voice of bids to ask. The pace is brisk and bidding is strong, but quiet and calm, this man can't go wrong. Because tonight for him the stars are aligned, the lives of his family and the pearl are entwined. Soon, auction fever, the adrenaline fuel, leaves two men locked in a bidding duel. Into the millions the figures soar, caught up in the moment, the men ignore any shred of sense they ever had, like it's last year's fashion or outdated fad. At last, one man's composure falters. Dropping his eyes, his expression alters. Too rich for my blood. He turns away. There's only one winner at the end of the day. Triumphant, the grandson allows a smile. He's willing to go the extra mile. For him, the money is not the thing. It's the pearl he needs to make his heart sing. The auction finished, the bidding to cease, his victory gives him a feeling of peace. His new possession to hold and touch, the pearl is his that he wanted so much. His eldest daughter, exquisite and shy, to her he will give the pearl of Dubai. An Arabian gazelle is his beautiful girl, with black eyes and hair of ebony curl. On her bedside table does her father place the pearl of Dubai in its velvet case. Late that night, the box catches her eye, and in her delight she utters a cry. She reads the letter her father wrote, then lifts the pearl up to her throat. The touch of the pearl on her skin like a kiss fills her heart with a feeling of joy and bliss. Her, wearing this pearl of pink and cream, his secret hope no longer a dream, fulfilling the wish great-grandfather held along, that one day to his family this pearl would belong. The end.
Now listen to another poem by written and recited by Michelle
Merlin. The Lost Library of Alexandria. In 331 BC, just 25 years old was he, a force of nature in his prime, already a legend in his time, Alexander the Great, a king exalted whom history of the world altered. With fabled Egypt, his latest possession, he'd satisfied a long obsession of austere beauty and fascination with this enigmatic civilization. Alexander stood on Egypt's shore, at the Nile's Mediterranean door. Breathing deep the salt sea air, he ran his fingers through his hair. Gentle waves caressed his skin, and seashells to his hand pulled in. In contented view of this sparkling blue, he now felt ready for something new. His immortality guaranteed, Alexander felt a creative need, man's age-old urge to construct and build, primitive, ancient, instinct-filled, the finishing touch to eternal fame, a model city in his name. He held a seashell to his ear. It whispered, "Build your city here." So he kneeled in the sand to trace his inspiration of classical grace. On the eagle wings of imagination soared a magnificent city of sophistication. Being Aristotle's biggest fan, he made the highlight of his plan a palatial library of lavish style, a heaven on earth for the bibliophile. With a stick in the sand a sketch was drawn. So was the city of Alexandria born. To execute his grand design, brilliant men he did assign, and many years spent on its creation, until its glorious culmination. But that he did not live to see, since Alexander died at 33. His Egyptian city fell to the care of a thoughtful general possessed of rare taste, sense, and ability, a man named Sota Ptolemy. Between blue waves and sunlit sky, a pristine vision to the eye of marble shining white and pure, a metropolis of beguiling allure, the soul of this city white and airy was Alexander's dream library. The envy of every cultured nation for its overwhelming reputation. Home to a million papyrus scrolls in countless towers of script-filled rolls. Ships that sailed from every port, books to Alexandria brought. All knowledge of man in concentration could be found at this glittering destination, and lofty minds made long migration to study at this elite location. Amidst the fluted columns tall, within the cool and marbled hall, cutting-edge theory and discovery taught, the frontier brink of human thought. Mathematics, physics, geography, literature, art, and philosophy. Civilization's guiding star, this library, famous near and far. Through 300 years of ministry, it thrived under Ptolemy's dynasty. But around the time that Christ was born, Alexandria was seized and torn by Romans from Ptolemy's reign and became a jewel of empire domain. 3 centuries more did Romans gloat while strangling Egypt by the throat. Then, far away, in Syrian sands, a woman took destiny into her hands. Zenobia, queen of Palmyra, she, a thorn in Roman hide would be. Unbridled spirit she did possess, and the courageous heart of a lioness. A warrior queen from head to toe, she mastered martial arts to show a deadly shot with bow and arrow. She found her mark, however narrow. Camel and horse she both could ride, like wind would over desert glide. Never afraid her hands to soil, to mix and drink with soldiers loyal, Palmyra, ruled by her sword, brought peace and wealth as her reward. Essential was her iron control over this precious desert watering hole, for strings of camels loaded high passed through this caravanserai with frankincense and spice to trade. That's how Palmyra's gold was made. Inside this shaded oasis respite, hundreds halted for the night. Palmyra, the great trade route connection, where travelers sought rest and protection. Yet beneath her toughened warrior pride, Zenobia had a softer side. Deep within, she was filled with yearning, a passionate hunger for knowledge and learning. Poets and scholars she paid and brought into the orbit of royal court. The written word she did devour, and savored script read by the hour. More choice to her than silk or pearls were ink-linked lines of loops and curls. Books were luxury, valued jewels, filled with the wonder that magic fuels. A precious collection she kept in store. It wasn't enough. She wanted more. To Alexandria turned her mind, the answers to her dreams to find. It just so happened that at this juncture, Rome's might suffered a nasty puncture. The provinces that the empire prized were chaotic and disorganized, for plague swept through in ghastly raiment, extorting death in tortured payment. And fighting men had all set forth to battle Goths up in the north. Awake at night, she lay in bed. Audacious thoughts ran through her head. An enticing night mirage would dance, inviting her to seize her chance. Seductive call to be obeyed, Alexandria's siren serenade. If Rome was weak and she was strong, why shouldn't it to her belong? It could all be hers, without a doubt, if she could kick the Romans out. Determined, Zenobia made up her mind, then marshaled all the men she could find and marched her fearsome military collection along the coast, southwestern direction. On sighting her objective, she approached with care and crept as close as she would dare. With the cover of night as her disguise, she preserved the element of surprise. Alexandria's army, small and slack, capitulated at her first attack, and the city was captured with bloodless ease, its pathetic defenders on their knees. But the Roman prefect refused to come out. In Zenobia's hands, his life was in doubt. From the tower, he shouted and sounded the gong. And for Zenobia, it all went suddenly wrong. The Romans rose up in retaliation. Fresh fighting ignited a conflagration. The beloved focus of her heart's desire, that treasured dream, the library, caught fire. Zenobia gave an anguished cry as orange flames licked the sky. Her anger and fury so complete, the captured prefect thrown at her feet, she beheaded with a single blow, her rage boiling to overflow. Though the fighting ceased with the prefect's fate, for the library's life it was much too late. Flames bloomed like exotic flowers, then exploded into starry showers. Spattered with blood, Zenobia gazed as papyrus scrolls of the library blazed. Impotent tears she shed in despair, watching fragment flakes float through the air. Ash, as thick as blizzard snow, settled in drifts on the streets below. The fire burned 3 nights and days, blotting the sun with its smoky haze, and by the end of this incendiary hell, the library was left a hollow shell. Centuries of knowledge lost through a battle won at unspeakable cost.
You have been listening to the poems written and recited by Michelle Merlin from the Gulf Islands of Canada. I'm Stephen Pitters, your host for this edition of the Spokane Poetry Program here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Remember, we are on the stream at www.kyrs.org, and we'll see you again real soon. Thank you for tuning in.